97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show here on a Friday morning. We're happy that you are with us this morning. So much to cover. And if you missed our interview last hour with the guy that got kicked out of a St. Louis City soccer game for wearing a Make America Great Again hat, you got to go back and listen. This is It's outrageous. It's silly. These are the tolerant members of the left who apparently sent an email in the middle of a game just to get the guy removed. Because I think it's all the winning. I think they just didn't want to be reminded of all the winning of the Trump administration to date. That must be it. Anyway, you can pick it up on the podcast, 971talk.com, wherever you get your podcasts. We podcast every segment for you here in the morning, just as a reminder. Coming up, we're going to get to J.J. Carafano. We'll talk to him about what's going on over in Gaza and Israel and what happens next over there. We got the Capitol beat with Congressman Eric Burleson. I want to find out what he knows about insider trading. I mean, if Nancy Pelosi can do it, we'll see what Congressman Burleson says about that at the bottom of the hour. But right now, this was brought to my attention yesterday because the stadium bill, of course, passed in special session. It gives the Kansas City Chiefs, it gives the Kansas City Royals, probably the St. Louis Cardinals, the ability to use taxpayer dollars to rebuild their stadiums, upgrade them, whatever the case may be. And it's a lot of money over 30 years. But was it legal? And my friend, Attorney Beavis Schock, is on the phone right now. Thanks for joining us this morning, Beavis. How are you?
Good, Mark. It's great to talk to you. Hello, Kim. Hello. Is Ethan still on the team?
Ethan is here. Absolutely. Yes,
hey,
indeed.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. So I guess Mike Moon, you can tell me the others. Mike Moon for sure. Brian Wolf, who's a state rep. We're part of the ones that Ron Calzone, right?
Yep, those are the three plaintiffs.
And they went forward with this, challenging the constitutionality of the stadium subsidies.
So we're just going to call it $1 billion, right? That's a lot, and it's over a long time. Nobody really knows the number. I think that when Taylor Swift went to Arrowhead, she paid herself for the venue. She had a rent agreement. She paid for it because her fans said, we're going to pay a ticket price that includes the price of the stadium.
Right.
That's normal for the entertainment business. The football teams, baseball teams, blues, whatever, they have a similar thing. They're in the entertainment business, and they should include in the cost whatever price it is to have a nice venue. That's just if the economics don't work, then they can't have the team. It's that simple.
It fails, right. Or they move to LA or whatever, right?
Well, the Battle Hawks are an interesting example because they're trying to make a name for themselves. They're in this alternative league, and if they can generate some interest and become an alternative to the NFL and fill those seats, hey, that's great. Everybody, it's just entertainment. People like it. They enjoy it, but they got to pay for it like anything else. I mean, you go to a restaurant and you say, hey, I want a nice steak tonight and a glass of wine. Well, part of the cost is that they have heat and rent for the building and all the other costs, and the restaurant succeeds if the people will pay, feel that it's good value at whatever level it is of the system, whether it's a McDonald's or it's the Ritz, there's a value proposition. So, Mark, do you want to know why it's unconstitutional?
I would love to know that. Thank you.
I thought you'd never ask. So we have some pretty interesting constitutional provisions, and remind the listeners that the Constitution sets up the rules of the game. And the rules of the game are when our legislature, our elected people, go to Jefferson City to vote on something, they're supposed to vote on one thing at a time. Each bill is supposed to be about one subject. It's supposed to have a clear title, and the purpose that is stated at the beginning of the legislative process is supposed to be the same as what emerges at the other end. And I will not continue with the metaphor too much about the other end. But anyway, so this bill completely failed that. What happened was they named it taxation. and it does relate to tax credit. It's all done through this tricky tax maneuver that some Sharpie lawyer in Kansas City working for the Royals and Chiefs set up. And it sort of relates to taxation, but the legislators were a little nervous about voting for $1 billion for owners of sports teams. And so they threw in property tax relief for certain counties. And that was unrelated to the stadium subsidy. So that violated the single subject requirement. And this gets a little bit in the weeds, but there's this Democrat senator, Tracy McClanahan or something like that, and she hates Republicans and she hates Kehoe. So whatever he's for, she's against. So she threw in a change to the campaign finance laws such that people in elected office could use campaign money for legal bills that otherwise would be illegal. Okay. And I think she did that to make another subject because she knew it would tank the bill. So we're working with this Democrat.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there some sort of severability put in this so that if indeed they found it was unconstitutional to use of tax dollars to subsidize this, everything else in the bill would move forward? Am I wrong about that?
That is absolutely in there. And I've written about 8 pages of legal stuff, which I haven't yet turned over to the other side or put in the petition yet. And believe it or not, it relates the severability relates to whether the issues that are being severed. This is so legally obscure, but it's whether it's substantive, which means the merits of the topic, or procedural. And we think that the issues that we have brought forward are what are called procedural, and therefore the severability is not going to work.
Okay.
So because the overall bill has more than one topic, the severability can't save it.
So this is what I...
That's trying to kind of in one sentence what we're getting at. Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
This is where I get a little bit confused. So I feel like so many of the bills, almost all the bills, have multiple topics, and some of them seem completely unrelated. So how is this one... I mean, I'm glad you guys are doing this, but I'm confused how this one's different than other bills that would be considered unconstitutional under the state constitution because they have more than one issue wrapped up into it.
Great question. Here is the way this thing works. These provisions have been in our Constitution since the time of the Civil War,
right?
150 years. But in recent years, the Supreme Court has seemed like, in some opinions, that they're ready to put some more meat on the bone, that they might actually start really enforcing this thing. But they've been very loose. And the reason they're loose about it is that they say, well, that's the legislative branch. We're the judicial branch. We can't get in their kitchen. Our response is, hey, Supreme Court, I put this in the thing. You're the Constitution police. You're tasked to defend the Constitution. So we think there might be some movement, and we think this bill, because of its controversial nature, has a chance to do some good where something that was less controversial would not. In other words, the Supreme Court wants to do the will of the people. They're trying to be fair and right. And they do their best, but when you get one like the stadium subsidy, I mean, just walk down to your coffee shop and say, hey, what do you think about $1 billion for a stadium subsidy? Everybody in the coffee shop will say, no way.
Right.
They would. And don't you point out in here that effectively what this legislature is doing is paying for Patrick Mahomes' contract?
Oh, that's my favorite part of the whole thing, which I thought up. So Mahomes gets $50 million a year, roughly. It's $45 million a year. And it looks like that the Chiefs are going to get about $33 million every year, but they got another $50 for the first three. So it appears to me that we're paying Mahomes' salary. Now, I put in the petition that Mahomes is a great football player. He's brought pride to the state of Missouri because the governor in his proclamation said, we must give these subsidies for the pride of Missouri. Well, I don't really think government's in the pride business. But anyway, Mahomes has brought pride. Mahomes is great. Everybody loves Mahomes. And I think the Chiefs are making headway in the St. Louis market. I mean, my friends are starting to follow the Chiefs, even though normally we have utter disdain for Kansas City as the second city in Missouri. But why should I pay Mahomes' salary if I'm not going to the games or watching on TV.
It's a great.
I'm just not going to pay for the guy.
It's a great point.
But the owner has to. The owner makes an economic decision. Is it worth it to pay Mahomes $50 million because he's good? He brings victories. Victories bring people in. And it's also, don't you think the billionaires could really care whether they win or lose?
I think they probably don't, for the most part. Beavis, thanks for explaining all that for us, my friend. We appreciate it.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye. We will talk soon. Beavis Shock there, shocklaw.com is his website. Good for him stepping up on that and challenging it, because most of us did not support that. Most of our local legislators did not support that bill, to be honest. Coming up, Jim Carafano. We'll ask him about the president and Benjamin Netanyahu being sort of at odds over whether or not there's real aid getting through to people in Gaza. We'll be back.
In the Palestinian state, is that a deal breaker for you?
Well, we're going to see. You know, I didn't like what they said, but, you know, that's... That's their opinion. I didn't like that. Not a deal breaker, but we haven't spoken to Canada today. He's called, and we'll see. But we have made a few deals today that are excellent deals for the country. You know, we're taking in literally trillions of dollars for the country. This is making our country very rich and respected again.
You know, I was born in the South. South Bronx.
Jim Carafano with us this morning from the Heritage Foundation. Jim, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, you know the thing that Trump left unsaid, and which actually nobody said except Larry Kudrow, which I kind of stole this from him. But by the time Trump was done with all his deals, the aggregate level of tariffs worldwide, right? So if you add up everybody's tariffs all over the world together, is going to be lower than when Trump came into office. And so, sure, we're making money and whatever, but Trump really has single-handedly leveled the playing field in global trade in a way that actually will benefit everybody that's interested in fair and honest trade in the world.
I agree.
Nobody talks about this. Yeah.
They don't, and their criticism of it, I want to get back to the Palestinian portion of that, but the criticism of it is that, well, these are temporary deals because they didn't go through Congress, and if Congress doesn't have something to do with this to make them permanent, heaven forbid, you know, Gavin Newsom becomes president in 3 years, and he reverses all of that and erases all of the tariffs, because I can't imagine 3 years from now they won't see the logic in this, but so far they don't. Do you have any concerns about that?
Well, no. I mean, no trade deal should be permanent, and no tariff deal should be permanent, which is why we constantly throughout our history have argued about tariffs and trade deals, and where, you know, tariffs has never been organically a Republican issue or a Democrat issue or even a liberal or conservative issue, because the economy changes and evolves, and what you want are leaders like Donald Trump who understand global markets and America's competitive position and are focused on prosperity and to devise good trade policies. So I don't have a problem with, you know, different presidents doing different things, but, you know, how many times on your show have I said, I don't care what people think they're voting for, they're voting for the commander in chief, right? Because that person is in charge of everything. So you are also voting for really the country's chief economist. It's not what the president and the government does, defines everything to do with the U.S. economy, but they have some major levers that they can push. And the levers, the ones they push that are most important are the one thing that no private company or individual really has, which is the ability to negotiate and to deal with other foreign sovereign powers.
I love it. It's true. We're talking to Jim Carafano from Heritage. Let me get back to the Palestine issue. The question to the president there, that bite I played, was Canada wants to recognize Palestine. I'm thinking, could there be a dumber bunch of people in the world? England talked about doing that the other day. Great Britain, the prime minister over there, Starmer, said the same thing. So if you're the Hamas and you're in the middle of negotiations and you know you're about to get a pat on the back from people like the Canadians and the French and the British, why would you negotiate peace? That just gives you a reason to stall.
Well, here's the reality. Remember the Muppet Show?
Unfortunately.
Right? And the two old guys that sat in the balcony?
Yes.
Right. They were irrelevant. Well, France, UK, Canada, they're irrelevant. And you think the people, you know, Hamas, they have to be smart enough to realize that these are meaningless gestures, that in the end are not going to save them. There's only two things that matter in the Middle East: what the Prime Minister of Israel thinks and what the President of the United States thinks. And, you know, that's not my opinion. That's the opinion of everybody in the Middle East. So if there's a Yahoo in Hamas that is still alive and he hasn't died from an Israeli bomb or the obesity of eating all the stolen, you know, food.
Right.
Those are the only people that can save them. And I just don't think Hamas has a future. And the biggest thing about the ridiculousness of this whole thing is you can't declare a state that doesn't have a government, that doesn't have borders, mm-hmm. that doesn't have any of the instruments of sovereign power and say it's a state. That's literally like going to your neighborhood and declaring an independent state.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, and we only have like a minute left, but I think it's interesting that this is the first time the Arab states have actually called for Hamas to disarm, right? So you have Canada saying, oh, we're going to recognize Palestine as a state, and UK, and then you have these Arab states saying, all right, Hamas, time for you to go.
I got 1 minute for that answer, Jim.
Yeah, no, I can't remember if it was the Canadians or the British said, well, of course, you know, we recognize this as a state, but, you know, Hamas can be part of the government. Well, what does that statement mean? It means nothing, right? So I think we're looking at a future where Hamas is not relevant in Gaza, and we need to start planning for that.
I would agree completely. Jim, thank you as always. Have a great weekend.
You too, my friend.
Yes, sir. We'll talk soon. J.J. Carafano there, senior foreign policy expert and national security expert with the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. All right. Did Nancy Pelosi enrich herself at the expense of the American taxpayer and insider trading? That's been the allegation. There was even a vote on an act to investigate her for that. We're going to talk to Congressman Eric Burleson about that coming up next. Stay tuned.
You know, Nancy Pelosi became rich by having inside information. She made a fortune with her husband, and I think that's disgraceful. What I do think is Nancy Pelosi should be investigated because what she has the highest return of anybody practically in the history of Wall Street.
Capital Beat.
Congressman Eric Burleson joining us right now from the 7th Congressional District. And Congressman, good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Please tell me you're like on a beach somewhere with your toes in the sand right now.
Not right now. I'm jogging.
Are you really? No kidding.
Yeah, trying to lose some weight.
Hey, man, we appreciate you giving us a few minutes when you're on your recess and actually having some downtime. That's fantastic.
Look, no problem.
So I know there's a debate up there over how people do insider trading. We've suspected it's gone on for years. Where do you stand on all this?
Yeah, so for me, this doesn't impact me whatsoever. Ironically, I was a former investment advisor. I traded stocks since I was old enough to trade stocks. But whenever I got elected, criticism, I just thought, you know, just to do away with all that, I would push all my every dollar I have of myself, my wife, my children, all into index funds.
Okay.
And make that sacrifice. So this bill wouldn't affect me whatsoever, but I do think it's painting with a pretty broad brush because, look, like, I think as long as people are transparent about where their money's going, let the voters decide. But I also think that, you know, by sweeping in every member of Congress to the abuse that Nancy Pelosi has been doing, is painting with a pretty broad brush. And the reason is rank and file members of Congress like myself don't have the inside information that Nancy Pelosi has. Like, she's a member of the Gang of Eight. She was able to go into SCIF briefings on every topic, period, like when it came to the U.S. economy. So she certainly had inside information, but most members don't. And I think the reason why the president was concerned is because it paints with such a broad brush that it brings in things like real estate investment trusts and private equity groups, which is what developers need in order to develop. You got to bring in outside funding. So I think that that's why the president was concerned. The irony is that in order to appease the president, they've exempted the president from that part of it, but the rest of the members of Congress will have to comply with that. So it's not exactly, I think, the best written bill. I think it could be more narrowly tailored. But at the end of the day, it's not going to impact me whatsoever.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you did make stock trades, you Congressman Bob Onder texted me and said that you still have to file disclosures. You're supposed to disclose all that anyway under current law.
Yeah, under current law, and that's why I think that this is more political or like a popular topic than it is an actual functional problem.
Okay.
Because whenever if I make a stock trade. And this is the reason why I don't do it. It's already burdensome enough. I have to file paperwork, additional ethics reports, every 30 days after within 30 days of the sale of a transaction. And so because of that, it's just such a pain. I'm not doing it anyway. And
right.
I also just don't want to deal with the headache of the criticism. So I think that this is it's a little bit of an overkill on this bill. But at the end of the day, and I repeat, it's not going to affect me either way. But the only thing I think is frustrating is my daughters are at an age where they are about where they're wanting to start taking over their, you know, start putting money in aside.
Sure.
They work at Chick-fil-A. They want to put a little bit of money aside. And I have to tell them, because your dad's a member of Congress, you can't buy Ford stock or you can't buy stock in Tesla or whatever. And so it's a mild pain, but it is kind of how broadly this bill deals with things.
So I know Trump the other day called for an investigation into Nancy Pelosi because of the astronomical amount of money that she's made. Would you support an investigation into Pelosi?
Yes. And that's what we should be doing. We have the information. It's all transparent. The public knows what transactions were made by each member. And if something doesn't smell right, investigated. Pelosi should have been investigated a long time ago. And I think if you were going to ban somebody from being able to make transactions, the people that are members of the Gang of Eight are the ones that have inside information. The rest of us don't have inside information.
Yeah, that's a good point. I want to play a bite and get you to react to it. We're talking to Congressman Eric Burleson here. Hey, here you go.
There are people within the intelligence community who believe that their will is more important than the will of the American people and will weaponize intelligence by leaking it to their friends within the mainstream media with the intent of undermining President Trump's agenda.
Congressman, that's Tulsi Gabbard yesterday. Every day they keep dropping more and more goods on them in receipts. And then we hear that Kash Patel, the only reason we found the Durham annex reports, the classified annex reports, is because they were in a burn bag getting ready to be destroyed. And now we've been able to dig back through them and find them and get to the truth on this. I mean, I know this seems long overdue and we've been talking about it for years. Do you believe we're going to see some action out of this against someone at some point?
I hope so. I think somebody needs to do a perp walk.
Yeah.
And needs to be prosecuted, because what they put this country through, what Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration did, was put this country through 4 years of hell chasing down a bogus claim and impeaching a president. And I think it's treasonous. And I think that somebody ought to be punished for it.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, I don't know where it goes from here, but I heard John Brennan on trying to defend what he was saying. But it seems to me like it's pretty clear. They have emails saying we need to get this rolling because it'll during the campaign, because it will distract from Hillary's email problem. I mean, they were
exactly
discussing this publicly or privately,
yeah,
I should say, in emails. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that you have, you know, non-political people making decisions based on how it's going to impact the campaign in and of itself is not right. But truly, the fact that they were willing to lie and besmirch someone's career and really in a treasonous act, I think is what's why it's so over the top and why they ought to be prosecuted.
What was the deal with the burn bags that Kash Patel found? What's going to be made of those? I don't know that I really heard. I just know he had discovered them.
I don't know yet. I don't know. But it's telling that the intelligence community is trying to cover its tracks. And that's why I think that the deep state is a lot deeper than what even the Trump administration has uncovered. You hear about 20 people being fired by Pam Bondi's office. It probably needs to be more like 2,000 people. I think the corruption in the rod is a lot deeper than what has been addressed.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Congressman Eric Burleson, our guest. So you've got the recess, the time off from the House, lasts up until September, I believe. And when you guys get back up there, you've got to get quite a bit done before to try to get a budget or prevent a government shutdown. Looking into your crystal ball, what do you see happening there?
I see a big, big CR, or not a big one. I see a continuing resolution.
Okay.
Because I think that it's clear we're not going to pass the 12 appropriation bills. And if we do, what's interesting is you're seeing the moderates and the Democrats pushing to pass a minibus or multiple omnibus bills.
Okay.
And what that means is that they want their earmarks. They want the things in their district. I think Susan Collins has hundreds of millions of dollars going to her district. And so at the end of the day, that's why you're seeing moderates push for a minibus. Ironically, a CR may be our best chance of having of spending less money than we would otherwise.
All right. Well, it's good to know. Hey, listen, we'll let you finish your exercise for the morning, and thanks for giving us some time while you're on vacation.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
We'll talk again. Congressman Eric Burleson there from the 7th Congressional District stopped his morning jog to do a phone call with us.
Good for him.
Nice.
I know. I said we really genuinely appreciate the fact that you were willing to talk to us still on vacation.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good. He's like Griff Jenkins, who calls us from his surfing vacation sometimes, which is pretty awesome for sure. All right. Kim, what's coming up on Kim on a Whim?
We've been talking as recently as this week, how big of an issue mental health is. I mean, it's clearly something that has to be addressed, but there's a new Illinois law that Governor J.B. Pritzker just signed yesterday that's going to require public schools to give students annual mental health screenings.
How's that going to go over parents? We'll talk about it coming up.
Kim on a Whim.
Hey, shout out to one of our listeners this morning on Facebook, Holly, who brought this to my attention. I had not heard about this until she messaged us, so heck, if you like to stream the show, which you can do, by the way, on all kinds of platforms, X, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, we're everywhere. Please let me know if there's something that you've come across that you have concerns about. And I understand why Holly was concerned about this.
Sure.
Basically, what happened was Governor J.B. Pritzker, who, of course, is the governor of Illinois, signed this bill yesterday that will require public schools to be required to give students annual mental health screenings. So it requires all school districts to provide these mental health screenings in grades 3 through 12 at least once a year starting in the 2027-2028 school year.
Do we get to see the wording on them? Like, did your parents vote for Donald Trump?
You might have a psychiatric disorder if your parents did.
Are there guns in your household? Are those the kinds of questions that they're asking?
Well, great question. The Illinois School Board has to create the guidelines for the screening. That should raise some red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And then the state will be picking up the cost. It's also, as part of this legislation, they're partnering with psychiatric hospitals to inform patients about the state's Beacon or behavioral health care and ongoing navigation portal as a pathway to care. And then they have mandatory reporting for any sort of suspected abuse, which in many cases there's already they're mandatory reporters or whatever they call them. But it sounds like this is broadening it out.
I know it's not a surprise to hear me say that I don't trust J.B. Pritzker as far as I could throw him.
Oh, I do.
Because
I think he's fantastic.
Nobody could throw him.
But
maybe Rocky when he threw Hulk Hogan out of the ring that time.
Hulk Hogan could. He's 6'7".
Yeah, but he's dead.
I know, but he could have.
Yeah.
300 pounds or whatever he weighed, you said, at his max. Wow. Anyway, this is crazy to me. I mean, yeah, mental health is obviously a problem. We've been talking about that even as it relates to that horrific shooting of New York City and the guy who was mad about the NFL and CTE and all the things, and he decided the solution was to go and shoot and kill 4 innocent people and then kill himself. that right there is a mental health issue. So it obviously needs to be addressed. Now, mandating these public schools to test the kids, and are they going to show the parents the kinds of questions they're asking?
Yeah, they should. Of course they won't.
Do the parents get to see the results of said test? Who's in the room? Is this some sort of, like, I don't want to say interrogation, but what does this look like?
Well, and let's say, for example, that the mental illness that they diagnose through one of these tests is that the kid is trans. I'm sure they won't tell the parent that.
True.
They'll go to extensive lengths to try to hide that, even though that's clearly one of the risk factors for suicide, I would think. Yes, parents should know. They should get the test up front so they know what their kid's being asked. Mm-hmm. And this should be an opt-in thing, not an opt-out.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree with that. If you want to have your kid evaluated, okay.
Do it.
But by all means, you should have access to that. But
you should know your kid well enough to know if they need to have a mental health evaluation.
I'm just worried that this will boil down to, do you have questions about your body? Do you feel like you were born
That's
in the
exactly
wrong body?
What
Are you
it
feeling
is.
Anxious and stressed out? And let's just say that someone diagnoses the kid with, like, anxiety disorder, which, by the way, is incredibly common nowadays. It's like everyone, it seems, is getting diagnosed with that. So what are the next steps? And it's not outlined in this article, and maybe they haven't worked out all those details yet, but okay, do they call the parents and tell them? Do they report that to, like, the state? I mean, where do they go from there? Are they going to sit there and push medication and say that the parents really need to make sure that this is evaluated by another professional and they have to get their kid on medication? Where does the line stop?
You know that's where it'll go. And here's the other question that parents should be asking if you live in the state of Illinois. You say he signed this now, right?
It's a law.
Governor signed it.
Yes.
Does your kid get saddled with this for the rest of their educational career? Could it affect their life if a middle school counselor doesn't like their answer to a question and labels them as somehow having a mental health issue? What's to protect the child from being hindered by that in their life?
Yeah.
And what if they're wrong?
And you know,
is it a standardized test?
I mean,
there's so many questions about this as a parent that I would. There needs to be a parental bill of rights where they can go and demand. You can demand to know what these questions are and when your kid is being asked these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I worry too about. Let's just say a kid's having a bad day. You caught them on a day when they're really stressed out, or they're mad at their parents because they didn't let them go out and stay out past curfew, or something stupid like that. And they're asking specifically about how things are at home. I don't know if the question's going to include that, and they start saying things about their parents, and then they start suspecting that there's abuse or something. Because let's be real, middle school is especially awkward. High school can be very awkward. Your hormones are going crazy. I have phenomenal parents. I mean, very, very loving household, but that doesn't mean that, of course, I didn't say things to my parents that were rude and that I regret. Of course you're going to. And so
you were a teenage girl.
I was a teenage girl. Okay. Yeah, that's right. I was born a girl, still am a girl. That's how I identify. I wasn't assigned at birth. Well, God assigned me, but not the doctors.
Now you're an adult birthing person.
Now I am a birthing person. Thank you very much. Yeah. You too could be a birthing person according to society standards, Mark.
I couldn't.
You can be whatever you want to be. You want to be a koala tomorrow?
Oh, my gosh.
You just identify as such and we'll treat you that way.
Be a German shepherd. That's
well,
it.
Those German
They're
shepherds
smart.
Are cute.
And vicious. Go ahead.
Anyway, those are all questions I have. They're trying to do a good thing. I'm sure the intent... No, actually, I was going to say, I'm sure the intent is good. I actually don't believe that the intent here is good.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions, Kim St. Ange. You know that, right? But you're in this environment, in a, I'm sorry to say it, supermajority Democrat state where they allow non-citizens to arrest you, and serve as police officers, you don't know what kind of craziness might be in this. What we need to do is get a state senator, a Republican state senator, or someone who can break this down for the people in our listening audience whose kids might be affected by it. Maybe next week we could get someone from Illinois policy.
Congressman
or
Boss
like that
would
on.
Be good.
Congressman Boss, well, if he's aware of it, he knows what it is.
Yeah, I'd like to know when the school board is going to release these guidelines, and I want to know that parents are given every detail about what... First of all, what questions are being asked and when this test is going on? Are they just randomly giving it to them, or they're saying,
right,
hey, today is the day your child will be having this screening or whatever they're calling it?
Yeah. Be sure and give them their anxiety meds today, please, before we give them this test. Coming up, we're going to get to our Corsair, a Queen of Hearts drawing that we do every of Friday morning right here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Exclusive radio partners for Guns N' Hoses. By the way, the tickets are on sale today for Guns N' Hoses, just in case you're wondering. And then we're going to talk to Tom Sullivan. He's the local man who originally pointed out that Sam Page may have broken the law. We'll be back in just a minute.
Get more at 971talk.com.